We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming into the program a book critic, editor, and author of a wonderful book that came out just last month called Milltown, Reckoning with What Remains. She'll be part of the Word Festival the good folks at Blue Hill are putting on starting this Friday. We're pleased to be joined by Carrie Arsenault. Carrie, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Enjoyed your book so much and looking forward to what you'll be doing this Saturday night and perspectives on, well, the town of Mexico and environs from both you and Monica Wood, who wrote the wonderful When We Were the Kennedys.
Yeah. She and I grew up down the street from each other a couple generations apart, or we didn't really know each other growing up. When I started my book, hers was just coming out, and I thought, oh God, how many books can there be about Mexico, Maine? Well, apparently there can be at least two.
There can be indeed, because they're both terrific and no shortage of stories either. And you know, Milltown, the title itself says it all. And whether it's Mexico or Jay or Rumford or Brewer or Lincoln or East Millinocket, the towns, so many of them around the state of Maine, took their very identity from those mills.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, that's really what this book is about, in fact, is about exploring the identity of a mill town, and in the process, exploring my own identity, really, as a Mainer and as a Franco-American. And as a descendant of three generations of mill workers.
And I think of all of those towns as taking great pride in what they did. And I look at the people in Brewer at the Eastern Fine Paper Mill who would brag, well, listen, if you're reading a magazine, that glossy paper came out of the Eastern Fine Paper Mill. And a sense of purpose, too, that comes in producing something of value.
Yeah, I mean, what we made and what they still make today is something really to be proud of. But there is also comes with some compromises to making something like that, and that's environmental compromises and the health of the people who live in those towns and the health of the people who've made it. And that's not to say you still can't be proud of the thing, and the two things can coexist. It's just kind of a conundrum, you know. What are we willing to sacrifice for our success, really, is the question, the main question in the book.
That was the part of the book that I found so stunning, because I knew so little about the role of dioxin, and that's so powerful, and that I can't believe it's what's not in every newspaper in the state of Maine.
Well, I think it was for a while. It was like there was kind of a big dioxin scare in the 80s, and it kind of got really brushed under the mat of the EPA, and as I outline in the book, especially at the end, I don't want to give anything away, even though it's not really a thriller, but a lot of that, people think that it's sort of over with, but as you know from dioxin is kind of never over with. It stays in the bodily systems, and it stays in the environment. It's bioaccumulative, and it's persistent. It's a persistent toxic, so it doesn't really go away. It's in all our bodies, so it's not really the past. It's quite present.
We're talking with Carrie Arsenault here on Downtown, the author of Milltown. In writing the book, you set out to correct some misperceptions, some outright myths. What were some of the things you wanted to set straight?
Oh, God, like everything. No. a big thing was really took a look at this American dream idea, you know. Was our past really so great? You know, I thought about that pride and about the things my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather made, and was it really so great? You know, was this upward mobility really a fiction? You know, the last four decades have shown acutely that perhaps it was a fiction. So that was one thing, and the other thing was really looking at the myth of Maine itself and how, you know, if we look at just blueberry cobblers and lobster and things like that, we think everything's okay, and if we think it's okay, then we might ignore people and living in the periphery, I think, like disenfranchised mill towns, like where I come from. So if we think it's okay, we're not going to do anything about it, you know? It's easy to ignore.
I wonder, too, if in the mill towns, if the safety net of the mill sometimes either held people back or lowered expectations, because those opportunities, I know when I first started teaching, student teaching in Old Town, and had a young man, when I encouraged him to finish up his work in senior year to graduate, and he looked at me and said, I don't mean to be rude, but you ask me what I'm going to do if I don't graduate, I'm going to get a job at the mill and make more than you in my first year.
Right. I mean, the mill was great opportunity. It gave our fathers and mothers health insurance and pension and really good pay, and it still does. So that's part of the conundrum is, you know, I don't know if people looked at it as sort of a safety net, but I think it was more like the goal. You know, I mean, even for a while when I was young, I thought, why not? I'll work at the mill. It made a good life for my parents. It provided a good life for me. But, you know, the minute I stepped outside of that life and saw there were other things going on, I kind of went away from that.
The story of the passing of your dad is the centerpiece in many ways of the book. And so obviously this was an emotional journey for you.
Yeah, interesting. I started writing the book in 2009, and it ended in 2019. And my father got sick in 2013, so right in the middle of writing the book itself. So I really hadn't planned on that. But it did bring the book into acute focus, obviously. And I really examined from a personal point of view of what it means to literally sacrifice your life for this, for your children and for your job, you know. It was emotional, but I also looked at him too. I tried to be objective and say, you know what? There were a lot of people in my book that died. There were several people, probably maybe like seven people in my book as I wrote it that passed away of cancer that were from the area. So, you know, I think I say this in the book too. It's not like if we're going to get cancer, it feels like when we're going to get cancer in our towns.
Mm. My grandmother was one of nine siblings that grew up in Lincoln, and I think I have the numbers right. Two of the nine moved away from Lincoln. The other seven all got cancer, and the two who left town did not.
Wow, it's interesting. I just started this project on my website, too, called the Cancer Yearbook.
Right.
So it looks just like a yearbook. With black and white headshots, and then underneath I have people's names and the diseases they were diagnosed with in Rumford in Mexico. And what I'm trying to do with that is to show what you just kind of said, is that this is happening in generations of family. It's not just kind of a one-off, you know, people get cancer, because a lot of people do get cancer, but it can show that, like, families and homes and generations of people in these mill towns are getting sick and dying.
As you mentioned, this is not just a history of Rumford or a look back or Mexico, but a look to today and a look ahead. What's the roadmap for our mill towns going forward?
Oh, I wish I could be optimistic about the paper industry, which I'm not generally optimistic. You know, in its day, and when they were making so much paper, I don't know. There were a lot of regulations that weren't in place that allowed things to prosper, right? So there was that, and then combined with, you can take a eucalyptus tree in South America that grows to full, you know, maturity in 5 years, whereas like a pine tree is 50 to 60 years, right? And you can take that eucalyptus tree and make a nice, evenly grained piece of paper a lot quicker and a lot cheaper than you can with a pine tree. So I'm a little worried about the papermaking industry. And this book isn't to say that papermaking is bad, but what I would like to see is, I would like to see them bleaching paper in a different way, a more environmentally friendly way. But as I talk to the people in the mill, they're not going to do that unless the market demands it. So with this book, I'm hoping to try to start a movement and create a market demand for using paper that's not bleached with chlorine products.
You've got an event coming up tomorrow night in conversation at the Jessup Memorial Library. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, this is my first event. I'm sort of doing solo. Most of the time I've had conversation partners and other authors and people I know or book critics, but this is my solo event and I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do. I don't know. I think I am going to talk a lot about this mythology of Maine and the sort of legacies that I try to interrogate in the book, not just legacies of the industrial past of our town, but legacies of my family, legacies of Acadia, legacies of our DNA, really. And I think I'm going to really talk about that, really focus in on the Maine parts M-A-I-N-E parts of the book.
And then Saturday night at 7, along with Monica Wood, is part of the Word Festival, and you can get more information there at wordfest.org. And before we let you go, I want to ask you, as we make the transition, well, I guess we've made the transition here in Maine into being a service economy now. The paper industry, which was number one in the state for the better part of a century, is not what it used to be. And how does that change, do you think, the way we view each other and ourselves?
Well, I think you said it right at the beginning. I mean, being a papermaker is like being a lobsterman or a fireman or firewoman or whatever you want to say. But it's a really big part of the identity. And I think it's really going to change. I think it's going to change the way the state looks at itself and the way each town looks at themselves, too. Because without that job defining them, who are they then? You know, that's another thing the book interrogates is who are you if you're the thing that you've done your whole life and generations of your family have done? What are you then if you don't have that? So I'm not sure.
Well, you put a tremendous amount of time and effort into creating the book, and it was well worth it. It is a powerful book, an important read for people in Maine and beyond. Milltown, Reckoning with What Remains. Carrie Arsenal, it's been great to talk with you this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you.
18 minutes after 4 o'clock. And again, go to wordfest.org for more information on getting involved with that this weekend and all the terrific people from the fest that we've talked with this week. Jonathan Lethem, who'll be there kicking it off on Friday. John Cariani as well, who's doing a playwrights workshop. Great stuff always down in Blue Hill, doing it virtually this year for the Word Festival. And our thanks to Ellen Borum for helping getting us together with some of these talented writers who've joined us this week.